Welcome to Answers Unleashed, a talk show to help you reshape your brain with science and faith so you find the answers in front of you. I am your host, Olympia LaPointe. Now I'm excited. This is our 60th, you heard me right, 60th episode, 6-0. This is our finale of season 5 on Answers Unleashed, and I am honored. We have a guest, and now if you know anything about Answers Unleashed, you know that this is a talk show to help you reshape your brain with science and faith. We bring on guests, guests who have been experienced in their field, so you can learn from them and learn what all the different aspects of thinking that they had to take and choose and use in their profession so they could move forward in their lives. And we are here tonight, or today, I should say, or it's not night yet, with understanding about the news. Now, I have a question for you. Do you watch the news? Do you watch the stories that are on the news? Sometimes they're not too great, but then sometimes it is amazing. And that leads us into our guest today. But before I introduce who he is, and he's sitting right here just laughing because he's sitting on the other side this time around.
Yes.
What happens when you see a tragic event in the news? What happens? What happens to you? Will it break you? Will you transform into the person that you're designed to be after watching that news program? Well, news reporting and the people that are in the news reporting impact the world. It impacts the globe. We are empowered with news. We know how to move with news. But the question is, what happens when the news isn't that great? What do you do? How can you still see the news and watch the news with tragic events, but still move forward in your purpose, knowing how you can make a difference? Well, today we have a guest here to talk about his experience in the news. Over 27 years of experience in the news, my guest has. Now, Chris Wolf is an Emmy-nominated KTLA news reporter, and he's a seasoned journalist who has made a personal vow to help people positively transform through the news. And he does that through his KTLA broadcast. When Chris Wolf was 11 years old, he saw an event that would change the way that he viewed the world and his role in it. And that led him to doing what he does today, inspire millions of people in the KTLA news. And that event would later transform the way that he saw his role in news and what he brought to the table in all the broadcasts. Chris, welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is fantastic to be here. And it is interesting to be on the other side of the table, so to speak. Literally, I'm on the other side of the table.
Well, I love
this.
I'm
the one answering the questions now. Usually, I'm the one asking the questions, but...
Well, yeah,
I'm happy to answer.
There's tons of people that watch you. You are on KTLA Channel 5 News.
Yes.
You've been there for several years now.
12 years now.
12 years
yeah.
now. People specifically tune into you. I tune into you because
you.
Your stories are fascinating.
Thank
and you,
you
cover everything.
Everything. I'm called a general assignment reporter, so it's anything and everything. From entertainment to sports to politics to tragic events. Murders, mudslides, mayhem, snowstorms on a top of a mountain in Big Bear. Anything that happens. I'm on the red carpet sometimes at the Oscars or the Elton John Oscar party. So it's been a great life, really.
I've seen it. And we have, if you haven't taken a look on AnswersUnleashed.com, / podcast, we have information about Chris Wolf. And I actually have a picture
Thank you.
Of you.
Yeah.
You're in waist level mud.
Yes. Yes.
And this is in Santa Barbara, was that? Where was that?
Oh, exactly? Man, that's hard to see. I've been so many places recently. Last year was unreal with everything that was going on with the hurricanes and then the wildfires and then the mudslides. And I was in the middle of all of it. And I was waist deep in water in the flood zone in southeast Texas in the Houston area for Hurricane Harvey. And then I was in knee-deep, waist-deep mud during the mudslides in Montecito following rainfall, following the devastating wildfires in that area last year. So it was, I'm sure it was in one of those areas, but it was incredible.
See, I hand it to you because you can handle these tragic events close up. Some people can't even handle it on the news. You handle it close up. You are with actually the first responders reporting. And I remember seeing you on the news talking about the Montecito floods. And it was just horrendous. And, and you, I saw your Instagram post regarding that. But that wasn't the first time that you were a part of news coverage of this type of event. You had a role in exposing information in Katrina.
Yes, I did. I was working with CNN at the time as a correspondent for CNN, and I was out in Katrina for quite a while and witnessing that. And that was just, you know, what you do is, what I do is, of course, you're very sensitive and very emotional when you're there, but you have a job to do. So you kind of put those feelings aside temporarily, get through the day, get through the job, talk to these victims, tell their stories, tell a good story.
And you're great at that, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. And but there are times when I'll go home that night or returning to my house in L.A. after a trip, and you have night terrors, you have nightmares, night sweats, all of the above. And y'all wake up sitting straight up out of a sound sleep and gasping for air, hyperventilating after a horrible dream. That happened to me when I got back from Hurricane Harvey in Southeast Texas after about a week out there. And there was a sense of guilt, too, because I just left people whose homes were 6 feet underwater. And I'm coming back to this clean, dry house in L.A. And so there's sort of a sense of guilt. And then just taking it all in. And I remember that first night that I tried to go to sleep, fell into a sound sleep for maybe a couple hours. And then I woke up like that after having a nightmare of drowning. And woke up just panting, sitting straight up, trying to catch my breath, looking around the room, trying to orient myself. Okay, is there water in this house? Is it dry? What's going on? So that whole week of being in the middle of that devastation and talking to those victims took its toll. And it finally came to the surface and when I got back.
But you made the decision early on, when you're 11 years old, to go into this line of work and to help expose information in the middle of crises, good and bad.
Yes.
Now, if I can give a little bit backstory about Chris, Chris Wolf is I find you an amazing news reporter, and I am fascinated every time I watch your news programs. And it is amazing because hearing your backstory and doing research on you and sitting down talking with you, you have been exposed to the world. And it first started when you were a young child. You went overseas and you had the ability to see all the different type of ways people live. And that brought forth itself in your reporting. And if you could share with our audience just a little bit about your experience. And then I'm going to ask you about that, what happened at 11 years old. But so the audience can know your experience regarding this.
My father was a business manager for General Electric growing up, and we moved around a lot every 2 or 3 years. And we grew up in the Northeast, upstate New York, and then parts of New England, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. And every 2 or 3 years, he would get a promotion, and it meant a move to a different town or different city.
A move.
A move.
New school,
new
children,
school,
friends.
Everything. New home, everything. New community, everything. Every 2 or 3 years of my life.
So you always had to get up and
yes.
move and go somewhere
Absolutely.
New. Had to learn something new and accustomize yourself to a new place.
13 years in Los Angeles right now since 2005 is the longest I've ever lived in one single city.
Congratulations.
My entire life.
I'm going to give you a high five over here.
Wow. I'm kind of a nomad. Yeah,
wow.
I'm a nomad.
You're like a news reporting gypsy.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's a good way to describe it. So true.
So, and you came back, and you came back, and you've seen all the world. You were in Singapore for years.
In 1978, I was 11 years old. I'm dating myself now. 78.
Well,
I
you look good.
Thank
you. You look good for your age.
Holding up. The glue is holding up. It's keeping everything in place. When I was 11 in 1978, we moved out to Singapore. General Electric built its first electronics plant in Singapore, the Southeast Asian island city. Amazing place. Loved it. And we were there for 3 years, from 78 to 81.
3 years.
3 years. So I grew up out there, 11 to 14. And I went to my first year, freshman year of high school there at the Singapore American School. And they have a full Singapore American School from K through 12. But it really is an international school because we had students from all over the world, locally, all over Europe. Australians were there, New Zealanders. And the teachers were also an international staff.
What amazing experience.
It was incredible. And we got to travel the world every summer for several weeks, going back to the U.S. to see family and friends, and then on our way back to Singapore. And I crawled up inside one of the pyramids in Cairo, Egypt. I hiked through the Himalayas of Nepal and saw Mount Everest and was hiking through mountains near Mount Everest. And these are experiences that, yeah, most people don't have. And every now and then when you get frustrated by the daily problems in life, you have to just sit back, take a breath and say, no, I've had a really good life, and I'm very, very thankful.
Well, that was preparing you for your life purpose.
I think so.
Because some people cannot get on a plane, mm-hmm. let alone go to the next city.
Mm-hmm.
But your life was designed to do that. And speaking of planes, 11 years old.
Yeah, I was actually 14.
Oh, were you 14?
I just did the math.
No, were you 14?
I just did the math. Yes,
You were like a teen then.
Yeah, yeah. We had just gotten back from Singapore, pretty much. Only mm-hmm. a few months back from Singapore. And 11 was the pivotal age when we moved to Singapore.
Ah.
14 was the age that I was when we moved back to the States. And I just looked up the date. It was January of 1982. And I was 14.
14 years old.
When an Air Florida jetliner crashed in the Potomac River in Washington, D.C.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Now, that was a very traumatic experience.
Yes.
Walk us through what you saw as a child watching that TV news broadcast.
It was just, I don't remember specifically whether it was live or whether it was on tape, but what I was seeing, and I was mesmerized, and I remember watching for hours just the network newscasts and the news magazines at the time that were big.
There
just
were 60
the two.
Minutes?
60 Minutes and 2020 were uh-huh. the only two in the major network news magazines at the time. And they were all covering this extensively. And five of the 79 passengers and crew on that jet survived.
Only five. How many
five
people?
Of 79 people.
Oh, my God.
Passengers and crew members, only five of them survived. And you saw their rescues on television.
Saw it specifically.
Yes, yes. And one woman was swimming at the surface through blocks of ice, and she was going up. She was just giving up. She was ready to drown. And some bystander on the riverbank just dove in and saved her life. He got some kind of major medal of honor from President Reagan at the time for his heroism.
And you remember what he said during that moment in time, like, why did you jump in? Why
oh, yeah,
did
he just said, I could not see her. I was not going to stand by and let her drown after surviving a plane crash. That was just not in my realm of thinking. This woman was going to survive this. And so he didn't think twice. He jumped in, putting his own life at risk. And apparently with hypothermia and everything else, he almost died. But he's like, no, this woman is not going to survive a plane crash and then drown without anyone helping her. And so he dove in and rescued her. You saw that unfold on national television. Then fire crews in a chopper were overhead, lowered a cable, and rescued one of the flight attendants who survived. And I just remember seeing her clinging to this sort of life ring at the end of this cable in a daze. And I think she was sort of bluish purple, and her clothes are all torn, and her stockings are torn, and she's just looking like a ghost. And it was such riveting, incredible drama, and it just changed me in that instant. And I knew from that moment on, I said, this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I'm going to be a newsman. And I never wavered from that.
How did you feel when you watched that? How did you feel?
I felt awful for the victims. I felt very thrilled and excited for the survivors. I was honored by those heroes who saved them and risked their own lives to rescue these survivors. It was just a range of emotion, but I was absolutely riveted to the news story and the coverage and to the occupation of broadcast journalism. And I knew then, and I never wavered. And I said, well, I think I'll do something else, or I think I might try this. No, it was a clear path from that moment on.
What I really appreciate about your story, and I remember asking you this years ago when I had first met you, and I said, how did you know that you wanted to be a news broadcaster? And you said, I knew early on, I knew mm-hmm. that this is what I was supposed to do in life. Now, you've gone through a lot of obstacles to get mm-hmm. to where you are.
Yeah.
Let's speak about them and what you had to do to change that way of thinking, because you knew in your heart you needed to cover these stories and give these individuals a voice, because this mm-hmm. is real life drama. This isn't a soap opera.
That's right.
This is real life.
Yes.
And you had to overcome so many different obstacles, but you earned degrees in journalism. And tell us about what you earned it and how that went about.
I pursued broadcast journalism at Boston University's College of Communication. And they say if you want to go into management or work behind the scenes as a news executive, then maybe you go into graduate programs and so forth, law programs, journalism programs. But if you want to be a reporter, you have to get out on the street. It's about hands-on, on-the-job learning and experience. So get that four-year bachelor degree and get out there. Get on the street, start doing your job, honing your skills, polishing those skills, learning how to write fast, gather facts quickly, retain information, then release that information quickly. If you're on the scene of a breaking story, you don't have any time. You have to learn what you can with breakneck speed and then deliver those facts back at your audience as accurately and concisely and clearly as you possibly can. Sometimes it's an incredibly stressful job with all the deadlines we have. And like the other day, the horrible story of the Texas school shooting.
Yes, and you covered a lot of facts from Texas.
Yes, I covered that from L.A. because information was pouring in from our affiliates, from different networks and sources that we have that bring it in from Texas. So all this information is pouring in. It's changing every 5 minutes. So I'm having to rewrite scripts and get new materials. And, oh, we just got a mugshot in of the suspect. We got this interview in from this witness, this student, this first responder, this emergency worker, and you have to, okay, well, we need to use this here and that there and use this part of this speech. And, oh, the governor of Texas just gave a news conference. What did he have to say that was pivotal and what was interesting? And he had amazing facts saying the shooter had a shotgun and a revolver, and he got the weapons from his father.
Oh, boy.
And now we're looking, into the father's involvement. Was the father aware of any of this? What was going on there?
And this is the details that the watchers need to know. And people yes. who can take action that can help, mm-hmm. they need to know.
Yeah. And the lieutenant governor spoke after the governor of Texas spoke, and he said, you know, for goodness sakes, parents, lock up your guns. This is wrong. Lock up your weapons. Mm-hmm. They're registered to you. You are the one who's supposed to use these weapons, not your children. And so you need to lock these weapons and secure your weapons. That is step one that you can take. So that was something I felt that was critical to get out there, to remind these parents.
That's a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
There was any type of ownership of
yes.
a responsibility.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I love what you have a signature way about you. the wolf
signature.
Man. You have a signature way about yeah. how you give your news broadcast, and you always do three things. I've
what do I
here.
Okay.
Okay.
Tell me.
Okay. This
Hit
is
me.
What I love. You always give amazing facts. That's number one.
You
are very detail oriented. You mm-hmm. call yourself a perfectionist.
Yes, I am. I absolutely am. And sometimes in my personal life to a detriment.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it is what it is.
You give amazing detail. You always put a spin on seeing the good out of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That is something in which you're very good at. And number three, you have a way of always bringing back new information later on and tying it into what you've talked about before. So that's the three things that what you do. And that brings us into our brain tip today. Every single show, we have a brain tip. And it is this. Whenever you watch the news, even if it is a tragic situation, you have the ability to see the story and see the positive outcome of the story, the miracle of the story. When you look at the news and you hear the news to find out that if it's the Ebola crisis and people are dying of Ebola, who are surviving? How do they need to help? Focus on that. If you're looking at a plane crash, who are the survivors? Focus on that. How can they be helped? If there is gun shooting and there's people that's dying, how can you get a message out to the people who are responsible and have ownership over these things so they can keep the environment safe? These are things in which you want to always look at. The brain tip is when you watch the news, look for the positive aspect of the news and find out what you can take, what kind of action you can take with that positive information. Now, you have not only a skill in the news, you are moving forward. You are doing such great work, and you're planning, and your goal in the near 6 months and in a couple years from now is for eventually for your own show.
I would love to do that. I would love to be a talk show host of some sorts, whether
TV, radio. Your voice is like great here.
Thank you. That's important too for a broadcaster. Speaking of which, I think you have to have a good voice. Number one.
If someone has a squeaky voice like this, would you want to hear that?
No, absolutely not. And you know, it's the same thing with actors. When you think about some of the best actors out there, they have the males and females, they have the most distinctive, crisp, excellent voices. That's why they all do a lot of voiceover work in addition to their acting, or they'll do endorsements for products, but that their voices are unmistakable. And as soon as you hear it, you won't see their face, but as soon as you hear that voice, it's like, oh yeah, that's George Clooney or John Hamm from Mad Men or Susan Sarandon.
That's
or Kathleen Turner, who used to do that. She had that deep husky voice, and she was a big movie star in the 80s.
And your voice has gotten you movie and TV roles, specifically not only because of how you look on camera, your experience as a reporter, you have the voice. Like always when we see Scandal, for example, the show that's just come up, these large shows will always find an actor or a person who can demonstrate that voice, because there is a news voice. If you can describe what the news voice is, how would you do it?
I really can't. It's a natural gift, I suppose, or a natural way of doing things. And the thing is, you don't want to be too affected, you know, because it comes across. I think it comes across as being insincere. If I start reading like this, and we are here with Answers Unleashed. With Olympia Lapointe, and then I'm going to get up out of my chair and say goodbye after we take some pictures. So you don't want to be so. Every now and then you'll come across a broadcaster who has that. Now, in the entertainment industry, if you're a movie announcer or, you know, a voiceover artist with commercials, many times you have to be over the top like that, an exaggerated personality, and do things with your voice that you normally don't in normal conversation. But I think for the news, you want to be as natural as you can be. And so really what you see out there on TV is the way I talk normally.
Which is great, and people understand you.
Yes, yes.
Now, Scandal. Tell us about Scandal, the TV show that was out.
There was, about 8 years ago, an agent approached me and said, let's talk. And he explained that there's a growing demand for real news journalists to appear in TV and film projects because actors really can't mimic what we do. And if they want us to ad lib on the spot about a story or a plot line or something, we can do that. That's what we do for a living every day. We can talk till the cows come home about something, a scene of a crime that we've just arrived upon. We can do that. So they might say, go with it. And then we'll just talk and talk, and they'll use it sometimes. Sometimes it's script, sometimes it's off script, but it's pretty fascinating. And then Scandal approached me, the ABC hit. They just wrapped up a series finale. I think they were on seven years. And I played a variety of talk show hosts, TV personalities, and a recurring role as Jim, a White House correspondent. And that was a blast. They were such phenomenal professional people, kind. And that was a great experience. I was really sorry to see it wrap up, but you know, everything, all good things must come to an end.
And that when things wrap up, new things begin.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When one door closes, another one always opens.
So if you had like the perfect, let's say it was your dream world and you had a perfect idea of the show in which you could see yourself being the host of, what would it be like? How would the audience enjoy it? What would they take from it?
You know, I hope they would be informed and entertained, but just overall, I guess, entertained.
Entertained.
And educated somewhere along the line, but I want them to be moved in some way, shape, or form. But to enrich their life, enrich their mind. Not just, because there's a lot of crap out there on TV.
There's a lot of just... It's like eating junk food when you need to have some like a real meal.
Yeah, it's the proverbial train wreck junk food, and it's just there because or the freak show, And is it really enriching your life? Is it enhancing your life? Is it educating you in any way, shape, or form? No. So I hope to do something on a higher level. But talk to everyone from political leaders to celebrities to just everyday people who have a story, a really cool story to share. And everybody does. And everybody really does.
There's a different, and I really enjoy what you talk about. There is the journalism excellence, where you're not putting information or giving someone a way to think. You're exposing information so they can make their own decisions. How does that fall into the way that you feel about real news versus fake news that's out there?
That's tough, because the media is taking a beating. And we do get accused of being fake news. And I suppose ultimately each individual journalist has to take stock of and responsibility for his or her own work. And you just need to strive for objectivity and do the best that you can and tell all sides. And we're human beings. We're going to have our own opinions and our own morals and value systems and so forth. But if you are a true journalist, you can't inject your stories with your own opinions and your own agenda. You have to be truthful and expose all sides to a story. And recently I did a story about gun control, and this was the people that wanted to keep guns in the hands of certain Americans, not those saying take more away. And I was condemned by some people on social media. You know, how can you do that? And they don't need to be. How can you put their voice on TV and their opinion? I said, because it is an opinion and it's part of the greater debate. And if we are going to cover all sides, as we should, then we're putting it out there. I had other coworkers covering one side of the gun control issue and I was covering a different one. But those who didn't agree with the side that I was putting forth, not saying that's my opinion, that's just me being the messenger as a journalist, as a reporter, but people didn't like it. You know, how dare you do that, Chris Wolf? How could you give them a voice? I said, well, just because it doesn't gel with your opinion or your morals doesn't mean it should be quashed.
And one last thing before we wrap up, you believe in always speaking your own voice, mm-hmm. not ever given a script that you're asked to read, but really speaking your own voice.
Yes.
And creating your own material that you speak and share about. What is the number one thing that you believe journalists should do regarding that?
Tell the truth. Good, bad, and the ugly. Tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Tell the truth. Well, I have so enjoyed this show today on Answers Unleashed. I mean, your story is just so amazing. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. It was an honor. Thank you.
Now, how can people find you? How can people find you and get in touch with you? And so producers out there that who are looking for great on-air talent over there, or even people who are looking for the next the show to create, how do people find you?
Yeah, I'm on KTLA. I'm on the website, KTLA.com, biography. I'm on all major social media outlets, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and so just Christopher Wolf. Now, there are a few Chris Wolfs out there.
If you ever need to find him, you can easily go to AnswersUnleashed.com/podcast. You'll find his episode number 60 there, and you'll have the link to where
it's a nice clean number, 60.
I know. I was looking at it and thinking, oh, my God, we've done 60 episodes. This is like,
That's fantastic. Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's
and I wonderful. Had no idea I was going to end up doing this at all. I just love science. I wanted to tell people about it. Well, audience, there you have it. Thank you so much, Chris Wolf, for coming on and speaking about your experience on the show. And for more information about Chris Wolf, you're welcome to go to our website to read more about his biography and information here. Well, that wraps it up for our 60th show. This is the finale show of season 5. So we're going to be taking a break all the way until September. So this is our last show, but if you want to listen to more shows, you're always welcome to tune in to kpcradio.com to check out the previous shows that we have. The shows are also on AndrewsUnleashed.com, so you're welcome to check out the podcast link to listen to all the different shows that we have on the site. Call us at 888-88-ANSWERS. Ask your question. And you can always reach me directly at facebook.com/OlympiaLapointe, where you never know. I might answer your question on air. Until next time, I am Olympia Lapointe, reshaping your brain with science and faith so you find the answers in front of you. This is Answers Unleashed. I'll see you season 6.